see, even just among our broader culture, that there is a desire for community. There is some sort of feeling that there is something missing there, that social media is not a healthy way to have community. It's not a controversial statement at this point, but people are really not sure what the other option is or how to go about building something else. And so what do you think is the difference maker for the people who are able to find something different? What's the switch there? Hello, and welcome back to the Be Unbound podcast. I'm your co-host, David Rethemeyer.
And I'm your co-host, Jonathan Brush.
And it's just the two of us here back in the studio for this week, and we wanted to talk about a topic that is very near and dear to us here at the show. It's one that we talk about a lot on the show, and we think for good reason. We want to talk a little bit about community, because it's something that is a word that gets thrown around a lot and used in a lot of different contexts. And I think that it's not too far of a stretch to say that most people would agree with the statement that community is important. But what that actually looks like in people's lives has changed a lot over the years. And I think that there is more and more of a realization coming up that we are in need of more of it, and we are in need of better community these days. And so, Jonathan, you and I were just talking about before we started recording how it seems to be one of the big pieces of what makes a difference in the lives of the young people that we have here in our local community. So talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, it came jumping back into our attention recently because we have ongoing conversations with the students in our program, evaluation, what's going on, how's the things working, how are things not working, those kinds of things. And in a meeting that we had recently with our staff, one of our staff members who's doing a lot of these interviews said, you know, the one theme that comes up again and again and again and again is our students' desire for real community. And there's some interesting nuance to that desire. It was not a desire from people who aren't doing anything. So, you know, the first reaction would be like, go join something, go join a small group at your church or go get participating in something. For the most part, people were participating in things, but found the relationships and the connections there to be unduly shallow. And so they were having a hard time making the deep connections, and they were contrasting it with the kind of deep connections they were getting in the program. And there's a interesting, I think, problem that is showing up there. This is a broader conversation that David and I have been having for a long time. We've been having with other folks. If you've been following the podcast, this is a conversation that I've had with Nathan Rittenhouse a lot. And Nathan's has some really interesting research that he's done on this. But if we could kind of condense it really fast, one of the things I think is interesting from a broad spectrum, David, is to look back and say, why is this missing? And why is this the fact that it's missing? Why is it felt so deeply? Alexis de Tocqueville was a Frenchman who toured the United States not long after the birth of the country. And he had these observations he wrote down, and it was this really fascinating look at the country from an outsider who loved what he was seeing. And one of the things he wrote about continually was that Americans were joiners. He talked about the fact that instead of relying on government, which would have been kind of the old European style from de Tocqueville's perspective, that if there was anything that was missing, Americans would jump in and create it. So that could be everything from the kind of community and civic structures that would help them govern a small town or a county or something like that, to recreational opportunities and things of that nature. Well, that joining attitude really persisted through, and I think we could probably argue reached its peak post-World War II, as the so-called greatest generation came back, perhaps in response to the destruction horrors that they had seen, and strengthened or built or invented or created or laid the foundation for so many structures that are now on the kind of last fumes of their existence. And so if you just look around communities, like if you go through a small town America, you'll see signs for the Roartons, the Lions, the Woodmen, Veterans of Foreign Wars, VFW posts, elk clubs, just Daughters of the American Revolution, all these civic organizations. You would have seen bowling leagues, softball leagues, various sports leagues of different kinds, hiking groups, outdoor groups. You'd have seen an explosion of Boy Scouts during this time and Girl Scouts, just all these different civic organizations in addition to, of course, of a thriving church, religious communities. So that generation built them. I think that there's a, and I don't know that I've done the research enough to make this as a complete sweeping statement, but there's at least some superficial evidence to suggest that ensuing generations either deliberately targeted them for destruction, so reacted against those institutions, or at the very least, killed them through benign neglect. And so now you're at a situation where most of those community structures that were essential to the fabric of the nation and the fabric of the individual communities that we all lived in are gone, or they're just shells of their former selves. They've been replaced in large part by virtual communities, and I say replaced with, you know, air quotes around that. And, you know, people are discovering that those virtual communities don't deliver the same kinds of benefits. And so what is lacking is a generation of builders. There are structures that are gone, and maybe a better way to say this would be what is lacking is a generation of remodelers, you know, of people that can come in and sort of rebuild those institutions in some way. And I think that we're seeing that reflection. We're kind of on the cutting edge of that in the sense that we have young people who say, I have a desire. There's an emptiness in the digital world. There's a desire for me to connect in the real world. And yet, when I try to connect with people in the real world, they don't have the real world connection skills that existed before. And so I'm finding this superficiality, this surface connection that is not satisfying, that it's not real community. And so there's a frustration. I'm participating with people, and yet I'm not connecting with people. I'm trying to do community, but it's not succeeding, and I'm not sure why. And I think that's an interesting observation. We're getting obviously just this small little sliver and this little perspective of it. And yet I think it is indicative of a broader situation that's going on.
Yeah, I think this was especially felt during COVID. There was a more broad realization of this fact when suddenly even just the smaller in-person community experiences that people had, just sort of these shared experiences that you just have passively of being out, going to the park and being in the same grocery store and things like that. Even if you're not actively engaging in a deep way, even if you're just being exposed to people going about their day-to-day lives, when that's removed, then people feel that even more. And so, I think that's a very astute observation. What I'm wondering, Jonathan, at this point is that I think I can see, even just among our broader culture, that there is a desire for community. There is some sort of feeling that there is something missing there, that just being on social media, there it's broader and broader recognized that social media is not a healthy way to have community. It's not a controversial statement at this point, but people are really not sure what the other option is or how to go about building something else. And so what do you think is the difference maker for the people who are able to find something different? What's the switch there?
Well, David, again, longtime listeners to the podcast may remember that we had a set of students on from the Acting Academy up out in Illinois, and they had shot a documentary about isolationism, and it was a lack of community. And the documentary is worth looking at. The students were fascinating. We actually went up and did an event at their place several weeks ago and had a great time meeting them in person. But they identified three factors. COVID was one of them. Social media was another. And the lack of a third place was another. And a third place being a place for people to interact that wasn't work or school or home. And so the idea was, you know, you're at home, you're on a device, you go to school or work, there's a requirement to that connection that may be superficial, and then there's not another physical location. And so if we take those things, I think to sort of broaden them out a little bit, COVID was just sheer isolation. And so consequently, I think a lack of social skills that has resulted in lack of confidence. People maybe in their formative years didn't have interaction with people, and so now they're not sure what that looks like. And I think that probably is wearing out, right? I mean, I think that we'll live through that, but there may still be some lingering pieces of that. So let's say A lack of social confidence is one. Social media would be an isolationism, and kind of maybe a doubling down of what COVID started. And so, what you know, if you had a lack of social confidence from COVID, you then lean into social media. Social media then brings an addictive quality, and that addictive quality prevents you from continuing to develop those social skills. And then a lack of a place. So there's not I think that the students astutely recognized that a third place provided a randomness that was necessary to form real community. In other words, that there was a chance to interact with people that you would not necessarily have interacted with, and those relationships then formed and created some of a deep fabric. So let's hold that thought for just a second, because I want to consider those, and I want to reflect on what it looks like, even if there's a sort of decay of what was happened before, what those kinds of things can produce, what that feels like when those things are working. And I want to use an interesting example. As I'm recording this last Sunday, so just a few days ago, I attended a funeral at my church. It was for a saint of our church and our community who was a long-term involvement in our community, except for a time when she was in Nigeria as a missionary with her husband. And so lots of connections, not famous, never held office, very much the definition of what we Unbound talk about is the extraordinary at the ordinary, an ordinary person who lived her life extraordinarily well, quite advanced in age. And so a tragedy for us in one sense, also a full life lived. So the funeral was very much a celebration. Packed our small church. All the seats were filled, balcony was filled. And what then happens is surprising. Is you start to run into people. In my case, I ran into two or three couples I hadn't seen in 30 years that had come from my home church. It was actually miles away from this area. People that I had worked with at previous places. And one of those ladies mentioned, as we were going downstairs in the fellowship hall for the traditional kind of after the service type of gathering, she said, in this valley, referring to the Shenandoah Valley, Virginia, it's amazing the interlocking connections. You can't live here long before they become layered and deep, and you often don't see it till you come to something like this. Now, that statement, those interlocking connections that are layered and deep, because of just the virtue of living in the same place, and in this case, there would have been some common threads, church connections, college connections that would have been connected to the church, retirement community connections. There were some of those institutional structures that we talked about that are fading that provided the framework for those interlocking connections. But there was also this randomness in that there was a wide variety of people that kind of knew each other and connected those places. Okay, back to our students and their observation of the things that are missing. I think one thing we can observe here is that if you want to create real community, you have to address those elements. You have to provide a physical space. You have to set up a situation where social awkwardness is minimized and grace is given. And you have to create a repetitiveness so that that can be practiced. And you have to cast a broad enough net that there's a random association of people. It's not just people that you knew from one place. And I think those are, I picked those deliberately for two reasons. One, they're the opposite of the pathologies that the students from this documentary noted that I think is accurate. And second, they're also, in my observed experience, the positive traits that actually do create real and deep communities.
Traditional education doesn't work for everyone. If you or your student wants something different, check out Ascend by Unbound. With flexible courses, real-world projects, mentorship, and community, Ascend equips young adults to thrive academically, professionally, and personally. Students consistently say that the close-knit support and resume-ready experience are their favorite parts. Enrollment prices rise soon, so don't wait. Find your track at beunbound.us/ascend.
Yeah, those are all really good observations. And I think the one that stands out to me the most that I think tends to be one of the hardest to overcome is just that with Now, the sort of online communities and the more shallow communities, the more surface level things and connections that just tend to be formed over very simple things, which like are not necessarily bad in and of themselves, but just are very lacking in terms of feeling that fulfillment that comes from real community, is that there tends to be a very easy on ramp, and there it tends to be designed around having as little discomfort as possible. There is just as little rubbing people the wrong way, very little room for just making sure that just trying to make sure that everyone feels very safe, and that they can just come exactly as they are, and they are not going to feel pressured to do anything different or anything like that. And so I think that while that may seem good on a surface level, I think in terms of building the kind of community that is actually deeply fulfilling, that is intrinsically completely wrong and very unhealthy. The one example that stands out the most in my mind is the military, is that pretty much anybody that you talk to who has been a part of the military will tell you that it is an extraordinarily uncomfortable experience. And the people that you are going through that extremely uncomfortable experience with, and often butting heads with, are some of the closest relationships that you will ever hear anyone talk about. And so I think that I don't think that most of us are called to be in the military, but I think that there is something to be said for putting ourselves in positions where we are consistently exposing ourselves to being uncomfortable around each other, to potentially butting heads a little bit. And I think that is potentially a really scary thing, especially if you're somebody who has been in a situation where you have opened yourself up to that and it's been abused in the past. And I think that's sadly a not uncommon thing. But I think to actually get the kind of community that we're talking about that is really transformational, helps us to build the kind of things that we're looking for, that it's necessary.
Yeah, I think then the question becomes, like, what is the mechanism that is used to do that? And, as we kind of wrap this up, I want to do this cautiously. I want to lay out a blueprint, but I want to put some serious qualifications on the blueprint terminology. I want to lay out a plan that I've seen work, but I'm not completely convinced is universal. So I'm trying hard not to say, hey, we have the secret sauce and that it works everywhere. But there are some core principles that I think are expressed in this system that I think are likely transferable. And I want to also hasten to say that this was not in a fit of genius, I designed this really cool thing and it worked really well. It had nothing to do with that at all. In fact, the whole thing was very, and I'm going to put quotes here, random, in the sense that it was a spirit-led, God-filled thing. Not something that we came up with, but something that we kind of almost inherited, I would say. And it's worked far better than I would have ever imagined. And so as it's worked, I've spent a lot of time looking back and going, how do I reverse engineer this? What are the elements of this that have worked? And so this is the story. And it is a story of a accidental community that has wound up being quite effective beyond anything that I would have ever imagined. Rewind back to, I don't know, 2018, 2019. We homeschool, so we weren't connected to a particular local school district or something like that. Had a local church, lots of connections and relationships there. But we had also spent years being on the road as a family, traveling for Unbound, which was a really fun experience, but felt like we were missing some deep local connections, and we're regretting that a little bit. Then out of our Unbound travels, we had 6 Unbound students decide to move to our region, to our area, and I would say our neighborhood in terms of being within 15 or 20 minutes drive of us. And in a what my wife might characterize as a fit of insanity, I said, sure, if you move here, we'll help you with the people we know, if you help you find living, a place to live and some jobs, and you can come to our house on Thursday night. And my wife said, what do you mean come to our house on Thursday night? And I said, I don't know. It was the one night of the week I thought we never generally had things going on. And so that would be likely it would work. And also, to be perfectly honest, and for everybody to hear and for this to go on the record, I didn't think the people I was talking to at the time would actually do it. So I thought this was a fairly risk-free assessment. Joke was on me. They did do it. And so we had to live up to our word. And we just opened the house and had them come in Thursday night. My wife and I had done some youth ministry stuff together in college in years before. And so when we invited the six folks that moved there, we also invited some local people that we knew in the area that didn't all necessarily know each other. And so we're pretty allergic to icebreakers. They feel socially awkward, but we felt like there was some sort of mixing event that needed to happen. So we decided, and I'm not sure how, and I'm not even sure which one of our ideas this was, to run something that we called a challenge. And so when the people came in, we just randomly assigned them to four different teams. It's always been four teams. I don't know why. And we had them compete in some little competition, and we just did a different one every week. And every month we changed the teams. And then, so the structure of Thursday night became people arrived, they sat around and talked for a couple minutes. Within 20 minutes of the start of the event, we ran this challenge. We divided people into teams. We spent the first couple minutes picking teams, assigning teams, whatever. We ran this little challenge. Ideally, the challenge lasted about half an hour to 40 minutes. Then we served snacks, and that was the end of the agenda. And what happened next was, from my standpoint, still categorized by me as completely miraculous. The last I checked, we've had something like 400 to 500, maybe it's close to 600 now, I have to look, different people have come through our house since 2019. In a general night, anywhere from 25 to 70 people that show up here. There's a cast that sort of stays the same, and then there's a changing group that sort of rolls in and out. Most people are local, some people aren't. We said, you know, you can invite anybody you'd like. There's no restriction. And we made it clear that you can come every Thursday night or you can come whenever you feel like it. And there was no membership requirement, things of that nature. But then there was an additional piece, and this is where it's not about rejecting technology. We formed a Slack group, if those of you are familiar with that particular piece of communication software. And you know, if people are interested, we put them in that Slack group. And then there's a second thing that things happened, David. So first of all, the Thursday nights created a repetitive structure for people to experience community of some kind. In a second, we can go back and sort of pull apart why that works. The Slack group provided an opportunity for people to have ongoing conversation and to not be dependent on either our family or our house as the only, you know, in other words, the location of this community is not Jonathan and Kara's house. It's the fact that they all know each other. And so people will frequently organize, you know, I'm going hiking, I'm going to get ice cream, I'm going to do this thing. There's other events that could be organized off of that. We've joked a lot and said that Bible studies didn't work for Thursday nights, but Thursday nights has formed a lot of Bible studies as people, you know, spun off and did some different things. And then then the last piece, and to the point that you were talking about, it provided an opportunity for people to share because they knew folks and said, I need help moving, I need help doing this, I need somebody to tell me a good mechanic. It provided an opportunity for people to serve and became an easy way for people to ask other people of things that they needed. Now, as we've reverse engineered it, there's been some really interesting things I think have happened. David, to your point, the challenges provide an opportunity to both be transparent and to be awkward and to be challenged. It shows even it's not required that you participate in challenges, but even if you're sitting on the side, you watch people be vulnerable in a way that they may not be in just a sit around the room and chairs, have a conversation, even over a Bible study, because they have to sometimes do, you know, a slightly embarrassing thing for a skit night, or they have to try to do something athletically for a different kind of challenge. And so it provided that. It also provided an instant set of stories that people could share. Do you remember the time that we raced in the river with a canoe with no paddles? Do you remember the time that we built the great big tower and it fell right before it was judged? Do you remember the time that, in other words, it created an instant story generator and that people had shared experiences together? And then there's something powerful about bonding over food. And so there's, you know, then you can come and eat together. And so what generally happens is people come in, there's a little awkwardness. Then you jump into the challenge. By the end of the challenge, the ice has truly been broken. There's a lot of laughing and reflecting and you know, celebrating because they won or mourning because they lost, which they then have conversation over food. And then those conversations break into different pieces. And as the rest of the evening goes on, some people are playing games, some people are talking. And sometimes those conversations are serious and sometimes those conversations are funny. But there's now a shared experience that they can reflect on. And if you do that consistently over time, of course, the community gets deeper and deeper.
I think it's also worth noting here, just something that I think is at least partially a contributor, is that, for the record, like, Jonathan and Kara's place is a fantastic place to gather. It's also not that special, necessarily. Like, it's not a massive house. Like, say, when there's 70 people there, it's very cramped. And so when there is 70 people there, for one thing, a mechanism for overcoming the awkwardness is that you're kind of forced to, because there's not really a whole lot of room to not engage with another person there. But at the same time, like, it's also just very much, like, I never feel like you guys, like, I know that you guys do clean up beforehand, but I never feel like the place is manicured, by any stretch of the imagination. Like, it is very much just a, yeah, we're just coming to somebody's house who does life here, and we are just invited to just live life for a few hours here on a Thursday night with a bunch of other people. And the food, for reference, is also not particularly anything special. A lot of time it's just a bunch of people will just bring, like, assorted bags of chips and pretzels, and usually there's just tea and lemonade set out, and that's pretty much it. And you know, sometimes there's more extravagant things, but that's usually it. And so I think that it's just worth noting, because especially in modern church youth group culture, there tends to be this thought of the way to attract young people into, like, create something that works is that you need to have all of these factors be as good as they can. And I think that there's honestly just a little bit of a resistance to just trying to have something that feels super put together. And I think something that stands out about the gatherings that you guys have on Thursday nights is the fact that, like, it doesn't feel that put together. Like, it feels just very much like, okay, the house is open. We're going to have, like, a challenge that is nothing terribly elaborate. A lot of the time it's just drawing pictures based off of silly prompts or something like that, or doing silly skits that get thrown together. And it's not particularly polished. And so there's a lot of room for just things not necessarily going perfectly. And I've seen a lot of times people who have come initially and just sort of have this very glazed look in their eyes of, what on earth is happening here? All of these people seem to know each other, and I have no idea what's going on. And usually by the end of the night, maybe they're not 100% comfortable and just immediately fully integrated into the group, but they've at least had some positive conversations, and they feel more comfortable, and more often than not, they end up coming back.
And that part of the fact that it's not planned, and I also want to be clear, and we didn't plan it either, is the part that I think is interesting. And I'll add one more to that. David said very kindly, it's not manicured. To be clear, this is an old farmhouse that should have maintenance done to it that it's not. Even when it's perfectly clean, it looks like it's falling apart, because it is. And it's worth noting that we would never have done this if I had not accidentally invited people. In other words, you know, if I hadn't committed to people that I didn't think would actually follow through, and then they followed through and we were kind of stuck, we would never have done this. We would never have been confident enough. And I also have to say, and this is true for my wife, and it's also true for myself, there is a pain every Thursday night in the fact that it's like, oh, people are coming again, and this is embarrassing. Like, the yard is tromped down and it's full of mud, or, you know, it's one more season, I haven't painted the porch pillars, or, you know, the bathrooms are not nasty, but they were not cleaned immediately before people showed up, or there's more mud on the floor that I'd like. I mean, there's always this, you know, that faucet is leaking. There's always this vulnerability of, you know, we really can't put on any kind of air of knowing what we're doing. And it also comes with, you know, and the 2-year-old screaming and the 4-year-old's acting like a dingbat. Or, you know, we've got some family tension of our own that we're, you know, because we were all cleaning the house for Thursday night, 20 minutes before the first person walked in the door. And all those things wound up being features, not bugs, but they don't feel like that. I mean, even years now into this, 7 years into this, there's still some tension in our household on Thursday night getting ready. There's still some vulnerability. There's still a little bit of cringe, like, oh, I should have taken the trash before everybody parked in front of all those overflowing trash cans. Oh, look, the dog just ripped it up before everybody left. Isn't that nice? You know, I mean, there's still that kind of cringe piece. And yet I look back at this and think, if we had not jumped, even though we weren't perfect, what would we have missed? And so as we kind of bring this all together, I think the challenge I would push out is to say there is an aching desire for community, especially among young people right now. And that desire for community is going to require some people to step up and be builders. There's new structures that have to be created. That doesn't mean you have to join the Ruritans and reform from within, although I think there may be a whole another podcast of an interesting conversation about that. And yet it doesn't have to be complicated as well. It can be just as simple as you opening your home with a very small structured program, so to speak. Come, we'll meet, we'll talk, we'll eat, we'll hang out, we'll be together, we'll do it consistently. And as we do that, we will build shared experiences, we will build shared memories, we will live life together, we will come to times when we go through pain, we go through suffering, we need things. And when you have that, and that's that last piece that we don't have quite as much time to talk about now, but it's not the Thursday night piece. It's almost like the Thursday night piece is what connects people. And then it's when somebody has a problem and everybody else can serve them, that it locks everything together. You know, it's after we carried the piano from the street up to the top apartment that everybody really connected. It's after we went on the hike and all got rained on. It's after, you know, we did, you know, we ran and picked somebody up after their car broke down. Those are the things that actually create the real cement that glues it together. But you don't get an opportunity to do that. You won't ask those people for help until you have some connection to them. And so that act of providing the place, being willing to be a bit vulnerable, providing a little bit of structure, but not worrying too much about it, and then following up when the opportunities arise, there's something extraordinarily powerful about that. And, you know, if you're in a position where you're not participating or thinking about real community, I don't know that this, I'm not promising you this is the perfect solution. I'm saying there's elements here that maybe you should pay attention to because they've completely taken me by surprise and they've upended my life. and there are things that have been really powerful in the life of, in my life, in the life of my family, and the life of a community that we've sort of accidentally formed here. And because I don't think we invented them, I think we inherited them, they need to be shared. And this is our attempt to kind of say, hey, here's some observations. Take them, modify them for yourselves, and see what happens.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that just really ties in a lot with what we try to do with Unbound, too, is that, you know, if I think we've said this before on the podcast multiple times, that if you ask pretty much any of the students in our program, what is the, you know, what is your favorite part about being in Ascend or being in Unbound, it's they will just immediately, you'll just see them light up and say, oh, the community, the people are absolutely phenomenal. And it feels like to me a similar situation where it's just a lot of just setting up circumstances where people have the opportunity to connect authentically, to work on things together, to take on challenges and projects. And more often than not, a lot of the time what will happen is a student will come to the very first event in August and will be completely overwhelmed and say, this is so many strangers. I have no idea what I just got signed up for. This is super overwhelming, and I'm not sure that I want to be here. And over time, though, they will have people who will welcome them, who will end up just getting them involved in things. And maybe they're really hesitant at first, but 95 times out of 100, that person will, and that kid will end up leaving and saying, wait, this is what actual real community looks like. This is something that I actually really think is going to help me. This is something that I've been looking for a long time. And there is a noticeable difference, even just after the first moment. And I think that's still something that a lot of the time I think in Unbound here, like Jonathan and I have mentioned in the past, like we have set up some structures that have made it so that that works. But a lot of the time it is just putting together all of the people and just making sure that they have the opportunity to do it themselves and to set it up that way and to have those authentic experiences together.
Well, statistically, I think we're actually closer to you know, when somebody says 95 times out of 100, you think that maybe they're just sort of winging it. We're statistically about 98 times out of 100. So it is actually, that's actually a real connection point in terms of how many people come in and say, oh yeah, this works. all things we just talked about kind of happen on steroids in Unbound. If eating together is powerful, living together is even more powerful. And that's what happens in Unbound and live events. You spend a week living together, eating together, doing those kinds of things. If having a shared experience together is important, it's on Thursday nights because the challenge is, well, in Unbound, you're building projects together. You're participating in these events that are quite intensive. And so those things absolutely make sense. And then if there's a way to follow up and help each other, you know, the kinds of deep connections formed in the teams and with the mentoring and coaching relationships that we have, and with the fact that we can stay connected through technology between events, just really doubles down on all those things. But there's also this, you know, our students saying, and I'm looking for more help in my local community. And so with that in mind, we'd like to invite you to do two things. Go to beunbound.us and learn more about that kind of community. You can also go to our YouTube channel and watch some wrap-ups from our events, which will show you, I give you a bit of a window on this community. But also we'd like to invite you to pay attention to a new program we're developing. In fact, it's so new as this podcast recording that I don't have the full name of the program, but it's a bit of a way to taste and experience our Ascend program, our post-high school program, without enrolling in the entire thing. It's a chance to get a sampling of some of the things that we do, to take some of the courses and get some of the content. But more specifically, beginning in April, there's an opportunity to participate in the program that will culminate in a community event. And by community event, it is a live event, first of all, but it is a live event focused on training people to build the kinds of communities we're just talking about. And so the coursework will prepare students for that. The actual live event will be an intensive on how to build the kind of communities that we've been talking about. And if you're interested in that, go to beunbound.us, click on the Ascend program, and you'll get a chance to learn some more about that opportunity that we're really excited and are literally in the process of launching even as we record this. So thanks for your time. We encourage you to be involved as builders of community in whatever it is, wherever you're doing or wherever you are. I don't think there's anything else I can challenge you to do to be more rewarding. We thank you for your time listening to this. And until next time, be unbound.